Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Today's edition of Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. For all your gold and silver needs, call us toll-free at 1-800-375-4188. For next hour, I'll be bringing you some opinions and commentary on the economic and political news of the day, Thursday, March 23, 2023. Happy National Puppy Day, ladies and gentlemen. Observed each day. Excuse me, it ought to be observed each year on this day. National Puppy Day celebrates the unconditional love and affection that puppies bring to many of our lives. Their cuddles and wiggles make us smile, and without a doubt, there are squeals of delight when there are puppies around. Mine's actually sleeping at my feet as I speak. Day also brings awareness to the need for care of and homes for orphan pups, as well as to educate people about the horrors of puppy mills across the country, many of them not too far from where I live. Puppies are a big responsibility. We need to be sure to consider everything involved and try to adopt from a local shelter whenever possible. Puppies there need love and a home just as much as any other. And in no time, they'll grow into your loyal pet too. So, happy National Puppy Day. Let's get to today's market report. Stellar day for the precious metals, for most of them anyway. Gold breaching 2,000 once again earlier today, now up $28 and change at $19.95.50, percent and a half. Silver up about two-thirds of a percent, 14 cents at $23.20 an ounce. Platinum up a buck at $9.94. Palladium, a little bit of a correction, close to 0.75%, down 10 bucks at $1,520. And that all comes with a U.S. dollar that is actually slightly up today, up, well, it looks like 0.19 at 102.54. Oil. Domestic oil, West Texas Intermediate crude down 2%, over 2% at $69.33 a barrel. Natural gas down a little over a percent at $2.147. And the wild and crazy treasury market, all yields down today. Not surprising, given what's going on with trying to prop up banks and what have you. The 10-year yield now slightly down 0.098 at 3.402. The 2-year yield down 0.181 at 3.8%, 40 basis points higher than the 10-year, and way up there at roughly 4.7 is that 3-month, the 90-day T-bill. Pointing to a coming recession. Now, in the all-important paper markets, mixed across the globe, FTSE and Nikkei down, Hong Kong and Shanghai up today. The DAX also down. Excuse me. Here in the States, Dow Jones finishing up about 75 points, close at 32,105. NASDAQ up about 117 points, 11,787. And the broader S&P 500 up 11, close to 12 points at 3,900. We'll round it to 49. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is today's market report. Brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Now, at his press conference following yesterday's Fed rate hike, Jerome Powell, Fed chair, said this: depositors should feel secure keeping cash at banks. After the government backstopped all deposits, even those exceeding limits on the FDIC insurance, at the two banks that recently collapsed. Now, specifically, Powell said, these actions demonstrate that all depositor savings in the banking system are safe. That was his number one intention. Powell's statement, pretty clear cut for this Fed chair, often speaks in Fed speak. Now, the statement on bank deposits, it's their status amid these financial strains at regional banks, which have been losing deposits since bank runs cratered Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank earlier this month. And while joint efforts by government officials to ensure their safety, even the deposits above $250,000 were meant to instill confidence. Instead, it prompted questions about whether other banks on the edge would be similarly protected. Many depositors, especially corporations and wealthier individuals, don't want to wait around and find out. Yesterday, analysts at Too Big to Fail, JP Morgan Chase, suggested that roughly $500 billion in deposits have fled smaller banks for big ones since the SVB fiasco. The latest, PacWest Bancorp, it's a mid-sized lender based in L.A., disclosed that it had lost roughly 20% of its deposit base since the start of the year, and that sent its shares down about 15% yesterday. It was forced to beef up its cash holdings by borrowing about $1.5 billion from credit juggernaut Apollo Global. Now, the ongoing nature of this crisis has gradually pushed some policymakers toward making the implicit guarantee of all depositors embedded in the efforts to manage the SVB collapse far more explicit. On Tuesday, Treasury Secretary Jenny Yellen told the American Bankers Association, I'm quoting here, let me be clear, the government's recent actions have demonstrated our resolute commitment to take the necessary steps to ensure that depositor savings and the banking system remain safe. Unfortunately, statements like those may not go far enough. for markets, which seem right now intent on pushing for something more clearly spelled out in terms of the government guarantee on the deposit issue. For example, stocks, which had been heading for actually a modest gain after Powell's comments yesterday, dropped sharply after Yellen seemed to back away from confirming that a fully explicit guarantee for deposits was being considered. During a Senate testimony yesterday afternoon, as Powell held his own press conference after the FOMC meeting, she said, "This is not something we have looked at, and it's not something we're considering." Regional banks promptly tumbled on those comments, dragging the overall market lower and underscoring the fact that policymakers haven't yet quashed simmering concerns about the global financial system. But let's drill down briefly on Yellen's statement yesterday. She told the Subcommittee on Financial Services and General Government of the House that President Biden's administration was focused on stabilizing the banking system and improving public confidence in it. But again, she said the administration was not considering expanding bank deposit guarantees beyond the FDIC's current $250,000 limit, seen as a major roadblock to swift action to stem even a deeper crisis. She said, "When a bank failure is deemed a systemic risk, which I think of as the risk of a contagious bank run, we're likely to invoke a systemic risk exception, which permits the FDIC to protect all deposits." Now, adding, the department will continue to determine systemic risks on a case-by-case basis. Yellen said the administration was not considering anything having to do with blanket insurance or guarantees of deposits overall. She said the Treasury Department was working to restore the Financial Stability Oversight Council ability to designate non-bank financial institutions as systemically important. Excuse me, we'll see where that goes. And today, several economists are saying that the Fed's latest interest rate hike yesterday could trigger a recession like 2007 and 8, except at a greater speed and magnitude. Macro Mavens President Stephanie Pomboy says it's not going to be confined to real estate either. It's not going to be confined to the banks. It's not going to be confined to corporate credit. Adding, this is really like 2007 and 8 all over again, except I think it's going to evolve even faster than it did because of the speed and magnitude of the Fed's rate hikes. Now, former Reagan administration economist and supply-sider Art Laffer, founder of the so-called Laffer Curve, believes there's a serious problem of the financial institutions because of the Fed policies and also because of fiscal policy. He said, quote, "I think there are a lot of cracks in the system, and we're just beginning the financial problems because you're going to see this pop up in all sorts of other areas because of leverage and because of a very sharp rise in interest rates." Now, some believe that further interest rate hikes could exacerbate the instability that we're seeing now within the financial system, but pausing risks allows inflation to become entrenched in the economy or even roar back with somewhat of a vengeance. Pomboy predicted yesterday's 25 basis point hike, but warned ugly stuff could be coming down the pipe, noting, "I think that we're going to be looking at much more rapid rate cuts than the market has presently priced in. Honestly, what we're seeing here is not just the banking sector issue. The everything bubble has now burst, and that's going to hit, as to quote the movie, everything, everywhere, all at once." Now, while Laffer disagreed with the bear trap report's Larry McDonald's forecast of pulling back on rate hikes by July 4, he did reiterate Pomboy's argument. saying that the Fed shouldn't be determining interest rates. They should be following markets, not leading them. And this is what got us into all the problems we're in today, he added, and the use of credit facilities, the banks, Silicon Valley. All of that's a direct consequence of the Fed's aggressive action of trying to control markets rather than following markets, and it's a big mistake. Now, Pomboy anticipates that the Fed will take a dramatic U-turn in monetary policy as corporate credit and municipal markets become more dysfunctional. Now, overseas, the Bank of England hiked interest rates by another 25 basis points today, on top of yesterday's Fed hike, as it too grapples with persistent high inflation, also against the backdrop of concerns over its own banking system. The BOE's Bank Monetary Policy Committee voted 7-2 in favor of raising the bank rate to 4.25%. That was a widely anticipated move after official data yesterday showed that UK inflation unexpectedly jumped to an annual 10.4% in February. In its summary, the MPC highlighted that global growth is expected to be stronger than projected in its February monetary policy report. Consumer price inflation, which excludes food and energy prices, has remained elevated as well. The BOE estimated that additional fiscal support announced in Finance Minister Jeremy Hunt's spring budget last week will increase the level of UK GDP by around 0.3 point over the coming year. The MPC said real household disposable income could remain broadly flat in the near term rather than falling significantly. Meanwhile, UK labor market has also remained tight, and the bank now anticipates that employment growth in the second quarter will be stronger than previously projected, while their unemployment rate will be flat rather than rising. And nearby, the Swiss National Bank lifted its own policy rate, but by 50 basis points to 1.5% today, while the European Central Bank hiked by 50 basis points last week in the midst of the banking turmoil. So we'll keep following these developments both here and overseas, and keep you in the loop in the coming weeks. Now, it's Jobless Claim Thursday. The labor market here continues to defy Fed attempts to cool hiring, and applications for unemployment benefits were down again last week and remaining at historically low levels. Claims for the week ending March 18th fell by 1,000 to 191,000 from the previous week, according to the Labor Department report out today. The four-week moving average of claims, which flattens out some of the week-to-week volatility, fell slightly to 196,250, still remaining below that 200,000 threshold for the ninth straight week. Fed's nine interest rate increases now since last March have been meant to cool the economy, labor market in particular, and wages, thereby suppressing prices. But so far, those things just haven't happened nearly to the degree the Fed had hoped. Inflation remains more than double the Fed's 2% target. In fact, close to triple. And the economy is still growing and adding jobs at a healthy clip. Last month, the government reported that employers added 311,000 jobs in February, fewer than January's huge gain of, 517, but enough to keep pressure on the Fed to raise interest rates to fight inflation. Its later quarterly projections, Fed predicts that the headline unemployment rate will rise from its 3.6 to 4.5% by the year end, That's an increase historically associated with recessions. Now, in reality, that 4.5% rate translates to something closer than 8.5% to 9%, counting discouraged job seekers, the government's so-called U6 unemployment rate. We'll stop there. We'll be back in just a few short minutes after these important messages. Stick around. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home. And if you ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too blind to see. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you, never gonna make you cry, never gonna say goodbye, never gonna say.
And welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody will be back on the program next week. For all your gold and silver needs, again, call us at 1-800-375-4188 or check out our website, dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. While you're there, sign up for our weekly newsletter and blog, edited by yours truly. Well, I guess the angry little Russians just can't help themselves. Top Russian security official warned again today about the rising threat of a nuclear war and blasted a German minister for threatening Vladimir Putin with arrest, saying that such an action would amount to a declaration of war and trigger a Russian strike on Germany. Dmitry Medvedev, Deputy Secretary of Russia's Security Council, which is chaired by Putin, said in remarks to reporters that Russia's relations with the West have hit an all-time low. Asked whether the threat of nuclear conflict has eased, Medvedev responded, quote, "No, it hasn't decreased. It has grown. Every day when they provide Ukraine with foreign weapons brings the nuclear apocalypse closer," unquote. Has issued a barrage of such strongly worded statements in the past, blasting the U.S. and its NATO allies for what he described as their efforts to break up and destroy Russia. It's been a drastic metamorphosis for the gentle-looking politician who once was hailed by the West as the great liberal hope. In today's comments, Medvedev denounced the International Criminal Court's decision to issue an arrest warrant for Putin on charges of alleged involvement in abductions of thousands of children from Ukraine as legally null and void. He noted that the move added to a colossal negative potential in the already bitterly strained ties between Russia and the West. He said, our relations with the West are already worse than they've ever been in history. Medvedev specifically blasted German Justice Minister Marco Buschmann, who said last week that Putin would be arrested on the ICC's warrant if he ever visits Germany again. Medvedev said, let's imagine the leader of a nuclear power visits the territory of Germany and is arrested. In this case, our assets will fly to hit the Bundestag, the Chancellor's office, and so on. He noted that Russia's nuclear forces have provided a strong deterrent amid the fighting in Ukraine, added that we would have been torn to pieces without them. Medvedev also challenged Ukraine's sovereignty in comments that could reflect Moscow's plans to extend its gains, territorially speaking. Honestly speaking, he said Ukraine is part of Russia, but due to geopolitical reasons and the course of history, we had tolerated that we were living in separate quarters and had been forced to acknowledge those inherited borders for a long time. The soft-spoken and mild-mannered Medvedev, who served as Russia's president from 2008 to 12, when term limits forced Putin to shift into the prime minister's role, was widely seen by Western officials as more liberal than his warmongering mentor. Many in the West expected Medvedev to win a second term and further soften the Kremlin's policies, but he surprisingly stepped down to allow Putin to reclaim the presidency in what Kremlin critics denounced as a cynical manipulation. Since Putin sent troops into Ukraine more than a year ago, Medvedev has emerged as one of the most hawkish and vocal Russian officials. He's regularly issuing blustery remarks that combine Latin mottos and legal expressions with four-letter words and sound much tougher than those issued by even the old-time Kremlin hardliners. Observers have interpreted Medvedev's comments as an apparent attempt to curry favor with Vladimir. He launched more anti-Western diatribes this morning, declaring that it's useless to have talks with the West and speaking with contempt about Western politicians, alleging a catastrophic drop in competence in elementary literacy of European Union leaders. He said Russia will produce 1,500 battle tanks this year and boost production of other weapons to meet their army's needs. Elsewhere, Japan and South Korea almost simultaneously dropped their export claims against one another today in the latest sign of improving ties. Japan's Ministry of Economy, Trade and Industry announced that effective immediately, the country would lift export controls of three key semiconductor-related materials imposed right before the pandemic in 2019 against South Korea. At the same time, Seoul said it would drop its complaint with the World Trade Organization over the same issue. The two sides agreed to the plan as part of their recent effort to improve ties. The announcement came a week after both leaders agreed to work past their troubled history and mend ties so they can better respond together to growing regional threats, namely North Korea, China, and Russia. The announcement came hours after South Korea's unification minister and senior Japanese government officials reaffirmed their close cooperation in response to North Korea's escalating missile threats at a rare meeting. Kwon Young-si is in Tokyo for talks with Japanese ministers and top governing party officials, becoming the first unification minister to do so in 18 years. It's pretty significant. His trip comes on the heels of South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol's summit with Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida last week, when they agreed to resume regular visits and launch high-level talks on security, trade, and other issues. Kwan and Japanese Foreign Minister Yoshimasa Hayashi agreed that North Korea's repeated ballistic missile firings are a serious and pressing threat to regional security and a clear and grave challenge to international society. The two ministers confirmed their close cooperation in response to the North's nuclear and missile threats. At the outside of the talks, Hayashi said that last week's summit was a great success and praised Yun's leadership toward improving bilateral relations. Hayashi also said he was delighted to meet with Minister Kwan without delay. Kwan, in response, said the process of improving ties has just begun and that he believes further efforts by the two governments can help bolster their healthy relations. He said the North's nuclear and human rights issues represent a problem not only for South Korea, but also for the international community. He said it's also necessary for his country to strengthen ties with Japan to tackle those issues. Now, South Korea and Japan have deep economic and cultural ties and are both key U.S. allies. Their relations with one another have often faltered due to disputes stemming from Japan's, well, colonial rule of the Korean Peninsula from 1910 to 1945. And after long negotiations with Japan, South Korean government earlier this month announced plans to use local funds to resolve a compensation dispute over wartime Korean forced labor. That's the first, it'll be the first full summit between the two countries' leaders in a dozen years. Now, back to domestic news. If you're flying anywhere, either for business or for fun, you need to listen to this next story. Observers are saying this summer will test just how well airlines have recovered from the chaos of this past holiday season. As we know, the winter holidays were a sheer nightmare, with Southwest Airlines entering full meltdown mode. Just 69% of domestic U.S. flights left on time in December, according to Department of Transportation figures just out. Of course, Southwest's debacle dragged the average down substantially. That figure is between 75 and 80% in a typical month, albeit with predictable dips during the busy and meteorologically challenging summer, fall, and winter travel seasons. Now, in particular, international airports in Denver, Seattle, Tacoma, and Austin Bergstrom in Texas airports posted some of the country's worst big airport on-time performance rates at the end of the year at 57, 62, and 66%, respectively. Wow. All indications suggest that Southwest has gotten its act together and recovered nicely since then, but the industry is grappling with a new set of challenges. The upcoming busier travel season will be a test for pilots and air traffic controllers after a string of near crashes and other alarming incidents at airports in recent months. In fact, the FAA issued a safety call to alert yesterday to remind pilots and airlines of best practices for safe flying. I'll be headed south on American Airlines in 3 weeks on my family's annual spring vacation. When I get back, I'll let you know how we made out on the ground and in the skies. Well, the market for Treasury bonds is considered the bedrock of the global financial system. But it sure hasn't acted that way in the last few weeks. Since Silicon Valley Bank's collapse less than 2 weeks ago, bond volatility has heightened questions about how these markets function, with serious implications for the economy and Fed policy. The volatility and poor liquidity that followed wasn't so bad that the Fed intervened as it did during the onset of the pandemic. Still, it reignited long-running concerns about the bond market, where shocks have been more frequent and the ability to trade more difficult. Those strains are made worse by the Fed's ongoing quantitative tightening program, a gradual reduction of trillions in securities it bought as a pandemic-era stimulus. One measure of bond market volatility skyrocketed to the highest level in 15 years, in fact, reflecting investors reassessing the likelihood of rate hikes and a more general sense of panic in the market. That uncertainty means that buyers and sellers are further apart than they normally would be. That's Kathy Jones at Charles Schwab, who adds, when we have a better sense of where we're going, that would improve liquidity quite a bit. Now, over the course of three trading sessions, March 9, 10, and 13, two-year Treasury yields fell a full percentage point, biggest three-day drop since the 1987 market crash. A week before SVB's collapse, government officials, economists, private sector CEOs attended a conference in Chicago to debate how financial markets would face during the next crisis. At the time, it was viewed as theoretical. Not so much now. Dallas Fed President Lori Logan said the U.S. financial system has become increasingly vulnerable to core market dysfunction because the supply of intermediation has not kept pace with demand as the Treasury's market size and complexity have grown. It takes a lot of Treasuries and other government securities to finance $31.5 trillion in national debt. Now, one point of debate mentioned by Fed Governor Michelle Bowman and other Fed officials would be how the Fed and other central banks could distinguish actions taken to support the financial system from those related to monetary policy. The Fed faced just that conundrum yesterday afternoon as it decided on monetary policy action against the backdrop of these credit market strains. The banking panic and the ensuing bond market chaos raised questions about the future of the Fed's current actions, including QT drawing liquidity out of the markets. Society Generale's Subhadra Rajappa warns, this is when people start questioning the Fed and quantitative tightening and what impact that's having on liquidity in the market. Liquidity conditions become a very important determinant of what the Fed will do on the balance sheet side. Speaking of which, the Fed balance sheet jumped $300 billion last week to $8.639 trillion. Dollars after gradually but steadily falling from its peak of $8.965 trillion last April. And hedge fund boss Jeffrey Gundlach said outraged Credit Suisse creditors were facing a $17 billion wipeout in rival UBS Group's rescue deal should look in the mirror and put on their big boy pants instead of crying about regulators. Gundlach, who's the CEO of Double Line Capital, had little sympathy for bondholders following revelations that Credit Suisse's additional Tier 1 bonds would be subject to a complete write-down in the UBS deal, meaning those investments would be worthless. He said Bloomberg reports the gunslingers who foolishly kept holding Credit Suisse's bail-in bonds are angry that they are being wiped out. Seriously, he added, put on your big boy pants and look in the mirror. That's where the blame lies. Learn how to manage risk. He's not pulling any punches there, is he? Gundlach went on to suggest some debt managers had simply failed to properly assess the situation. He added, members of my own investment team met with a very significant asset allocator last Wednesday. They reported that all of their distressed debt managers opined that Credit Suisse's bonds were money good, meaning they would return par. Only off by 100 points. To quote Rick Perry, oops. Well, the $17 billion write-down prompted outrage from the impacted Credit Suisse bondholders who questioned how the government-brokered UBS takeover was allowed to proceed under those terms. Now, the shareholders of Credit Suisse will receive 3 billion francs as part of the takeover deal. That's about $3.2 billion. As I said on Tuesday's program, in most cases like these, shareholders take losses before bondholders do. That's a factor that's contributed to the outrage and led to accusations that Swiss regulators ignored a well-established precedent while overseeing this buyout arrangement. Bond giant PIMCO was among the firms impacted by the deal, losing about $340 billion on its AT1 bond holdings, according to one report. Hey, gosh, that came upon us quickly. We're heading into, an eventual recession, but right now we're headed into another break. I hope you'll stick around. You're listening to Financial Survival. Take a look at me. Come on, baby. Don't say nay. I gotta know if your sweet love is gonna save me. We may lose and we may win, but we will never be here again. So open up, I'm climbing in. So take it easy.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. The office and phone lines are open, 1-800-375-4188. Now, over the last 50 years, Americans have eradicated smallpox, reduced infant mortality rates, and deaths from, heart disease by around 70%. Added a decade to the average American's life. And some would say, invented and improved even the internet. Well, when it comes to the national poverty rate, however, we've made almost no progress. In 1970, a little more than 12% of the U.S. population was considered poor. By 2019, around 11% was. In his new book, Poverty by America, sociologist Matthew Desmond proposes a reason for that stagnation, namely that we benefit from it. In an interview, Desmond spoke this month about his argument that many individuals and large U.S. companies profit from tens of millions of Americans living in poverty and how things might finally start changing. His last book, called Evicted, Poverty and Profit in the American City, won the 2017 Pulitzer Prize for General Nonfiction. Now, in response to the question, how are we able to be so detached from the state in which so many others are living, Desmond said, well, the country's so segregated. I think many of us can go about our daily lives only confronting poverty from the car window or in the news. He said that many financially comfortable and well-off Americans live as unwitting enemies of the poor. We have this national entitlement program that's not just for the poor. In 2020, for example, the nation spent $53 billion on direct housing assistance to the needy, things like public housing or vouchers that reduce the rent burden. That same year, we spent over $190 billion on homeowner tax subsidies, like the home mortgage interest deduction, which homeowners are entitled to. He said protecting and fighting for those subsidies leaves less money with which to fight poverty. He continued, I'm not calling for redistribution. That entails giving up something that's mine and that I've earned. What I'm talking about is less rich aid and more poor aid. There was a study pointed out, published recently, showing that if just the top 1% of us paid the taxes we actually owe, so not pay more taxes, but just stop evading the tax bills, we as a nation could raise $175 billion more every year, which is enough to pull every single American out of poverty. When you're trying to fight for ambitious, bold solutions to poverty, you immediately run up against people saying, well, how are we going to afford it? We're $31 trillion in debt. And the answer is staring us right in the face, according to Desmond. We could afford it if we allowed the government to do its job. Scary thought, I know, but thinking that poverty in the U.S. is avoidable makes its existence feel so much more worse. Desmond says it makes it so much worse morally. We are such a rich country, we can confront this issue in such a more robust way than we have, and it would be a shame that we haven't. It should shame us that so many people are living with such uncertainty and even agony. As union power started waning in the U.S., wages started slagging, and then CEO compensation started growing. The corporations have used that economic power, he says, and transferred it into political power to make organizing harder and to combat organizing efforts. As a child, Desmond often blamed his father when he lost his job, for example, and when the bank took his family's house. In answering why he thinks that was, Desmond says, well, when you're in the middle of something, you often grasp at the explanation that's closest to you, which is often about shame and guilt and blame. He says when he wrote his last book on families facing evictions, a lot of the families who lost their homes would blame themselves. But I think it's the sociologist's job, he said, to quote C. Wright Mills, to turn a personal problem into a political one. Millions of people are facing this every year. This is not on you. Desmond's calling on Americans to become poverty abolitionists. He thinks that it shares with other abolitionist movements a commitment to literally end poverty. It views poverty not as something that we should get a little better at, but something we should actually abolish, because it's a sin, it's a disgrace. He says the most impactful actions people can take to fight poverty in their own neighborhoods are to go to a Tuesday night zoning meeting in your community and support affordable housing projects that a lot of neighbors are trying to kill. And you can say, look, I'm not going to deny other kids opportunities that my kids have had living here. I'm not going to embrace segregation. That ends with me. You can shop at places that do right by their workers and that don't try to bust people trying to organize. There are also these amazing anti-poverty movements in every state. For folks who are struggling, it means a smaller life. It means diminished dreams. It means illnesses that don't improve. And for those of us who enjoy some security and prosperity, it means an affront to your sense of decency. If nothing improves, he concludes, it really belies any claim to national greatness. Well, thanks to Desmond and to CNBC News' Annie Nova for that interview. Now, homebuyers aren't putting as much money down as they were at the height of the housing frenzy. The typical homebuyer made a down payment of $42,000 in January, the lowest number in almost 2 years, according to Redfin. The median down payment is now 10% of the purchase price of a house, off its peak of nearly 18%, which amounted to $65,000 in May last year. Of course, high mortgage rates changed the calculus around down payments. The rates crushed the market and drove a lot of people away, so there's less competition. Buyers generally don't need to distinguish themselves from other bidders with big deposits. When a lot of buyers are vying for the same home, a chunky down payment's assigned to the seller, but well, you're a safe bet compared to someone else who's putting less money down. Sign that their financing could actually fall through. Meanwhile, home prices haven't come down very much. In fact, they fell for the first time year over year this February by 0.2% from last year, according to the National Association of Realtors. Add to that higher rates, and you get buyers facing higher monthly payments who are more constrained than what they can afford to put down. First-time buyers who have not been able to marshal the cash for that big down payment during the boom now have a shot of getting in the game. And that is one silver lining. Hey, for most of this year so far, Americans have been feeling pretty good about their job security. Well, that may have started to change. The banking crisis and its multiplier effects is hanging over the economy all of a sudden. The credit that flows from regional banks could certainly tighten, which you've already begun to see, and that would slow down the economy and potentially lead to job losses. In polling conducted about 10 days ago amid the FDIC seizure of Silicon Valley Bank and about headlines in general about the health of the regional banking system, almost 20% of adults polled by Morning Consult said they worried about losing their job in the next month. That's close to double the 11% a month earlier, and it's the highest in over 2 years. Among high-income respondents, that is, those making more than $100,000 a year, job loss fears were the strongest at 24%, up from just 9% in February. This is just one data point from one poll, and curiously, Morning Consult's polling on consumer sentiment showed that measure largely unchanged. The question is whether these March jitters turn out to be an anomaly in the midst of one panicked weekend or a more sustained uptick in job fears. Now, rose at historically fast rates for low-wage workers between 2019 and 2022, even after adjusting for inflation, according to the Economic Policy Institute. The tight labor market and disruptions from the pandemic gave folks at the lowest end of the pay scale unprecedented amounts of leverage over employers, as Melody and I have been talking about. The multimillion layoffs of 2020, combined with trillions of dollars of relief money from the government, actually put workers in a better position, notwithstanding the high inflation. With time away from work and resources to fall back on to find new jobs once that market came back. Economist Elise Gould at EPI, who co-wrote this analysis, said for so many people, they didn't actually realize that there might be better opportunities out there. But these folks still aren't making much money. In 2022, for example, the 10th percentile hourly wage, i.e. workers at the bottom, was $12.57 an hour. And that's not considered enough for one person to maintain an adequate standard of living anywhere in the U.S. Worth noting, those at the very, very top saw enormous gains Wages for the top 1% and 0.1% rose 16 and 29% between 2019 and 2021, according to Social Security Administration data, also analyzed by the EPI. And so once again, we see the rich getting richer and the poor, in most cases, not even keeping up with inflation and getting poorer. And last today, will the banking crisis cause the Fed to pause? Well, it didn't yesterday. For much of the last year, the Fed's been trying to make money tougher to get a hold of by raising its interest rate from zero to an upper range of 5% now. And the simmering banking crisis ends up maybe doing the same. Fed lifted interest rates by another quarter point yesterday, possibly setting the stage for a pause to the rate hiking campaign that began last year. This is a market shift from a couple of weeks back when Wall Street consensus called for the Fed to deliver additional large rate hikes as high as 50 basis points to cool the economy and tame inflation. But then came the biggest banking crisis since 2008 as the sudden collapse of SVB set off a scramble among depositors and forced banks to rush to the Fed and other too-big-to-fail banks for cash. These kinds of stresses in the banking system contribute to what financial types refer to as tightening of credit, somewhat vague term that basically means money gets harder to come by. The logic's pretty simple. When they're worried, bankers and investors cling to their cash rather than lend it out. The impact of these tighter conditions isn't so dissimilar to what happens when the Fed raises interest rates. Money gets more expensive as nervous investors and bankers have to be paid more to part with it. Now, some of the comments from Fed Chair Powell after the rate decision yesterday suggest that these tightening market conditions could allow the Fed to get away with fewer rate hikes than they expected just last month. He said, we're thinking about banks tightening credit as effectively doing the same thing that rate hikes do. So in a way, that substitutes for rate hikes. Yay! Continuing, he added, policy has got to be tight enough to bring inflation down to 2% over time, but it doesn't all have to come from rate hikes. It can come from tighter credit conditions. Well, Powell acknowledged that we don't yet know how significant or long-lasting this credit tightening will be. And some are already taking a guess, and it's nothing more than that, a guess. Too big to fail Goldman Sachs, for example, estimated in a report last week that the crisis would be equivalent to as much as a half-point rate increase. And that suggests the Fed's rate hiking campaign will soon pause. That maybe yesterday's was the last for some time, perhaps even along with its parallel QT program. Only one thing's for sure in this respect, though. We shall see. Hey, that's all the time we have today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Butch will be here tomorrow to close out the week. Also, be on the lookout for our weekly What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in your email inboxes in the AM. Thanks, as always, to our engineer, Todd, and to you for tuning into Financial Survival. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Allen. Have a great evening. Please be safe out there. Bye-bye.
I work all night. I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.